talk a lot, so I'm going to time myself. Just a heads up. You know, my name is Dave, and I am an alcoholic. I thank you all for coming out here. This is a very rough subject, and not a lot of people like to talk about it, guys especially. You know, and that's why I come all the way out here to speak on this panel. I live in Austin, Texas. My sobriety date is 7/7/18. Yes, I do get 1 year tomorrow, God willing. You know? In reality, it has a lot to do with speaking on the subject. Because for so long, man, I've been trying to get this program for 6 years. And was never willing to allow my voice to be heard. I never wanted people to know what was going on in my life or what had happened to me because I felt less of like a man. You know, I mean, I thought people were going to look down upon me and think that I was different just because of the fact is that I had been sexually molested from when I was 3 till I was 10 by the babysitter. And I allowed it because we grew up really poor. So he would take us out to get ice cream and to the races and all do all this stuff. But like one of the stipulations was that he had to give us a bath every single night. And that we weren't allowed to go home and tell our mother. Because if we went home and told our mother, then we could no longer get ice cream and go to the races no more. So as a little kid, I didn't know any better. I just figured it was normal. You know, to have this grown man toweling me down, washing me head to toe, even though I could physically do it myself. I didn't have a voice. You know, I grew up without a father. My father's done almost 21 years of my life in prison. So my mother's been my rock. You know, she's worked her entire life to give us what she could. You know, so my mom was really never around. I grew up, had to grow up fast. I was the oldest boy of the family. You know, so at like 10 years old, we moved out of Florida and back to Massachusetts because I had watched my mother be sexually assaulted mentally, physically. Like every single guy she brought into the house beat the ever living hell out of her. And the way that my mother coped with it was through drugs and alcohol. You know, because I was able to put a smile on her face so she'd come up and raise us kids and go to work every single day. So she figured the safest place for us to go was back to Massachusetts, where her family was. So we moved in with my aunt. We all thought it was going to be safe. You know what I mean? I thought I got away from that babysitter, man. Everything was going to be okay. But sadly enough, it wasn't. At 10 years old, I was raped by my cousin. Because I was a very shy kid. I come from Florida with a thick southern accent to Massachusetts. I didn't know how to make friends. You know, so my cousin thought that he was going to toughen me up. I was going to be more like a man. He was going to teach me how to talk to women and what to do with women at 10 years old. So he sexually raped me. So that way I would know what to do. And it straight up messed me up. I didn't know what to do. It's like, in reality, it's like the babysitter was cool. I didn't really know the guy. We got far away from him. But then once it came into the part where it was family, that really messed me up because I figured that's where my trust was. My family was going to take care of me. But it didn't happen, you know. But I also played my part because I was never willing to tell anybody. I was way too afraid. You know, it was my dad's brother's son. My dad and his brother were in prison. You know, both doing 14 years. So it's like, I just didn't want to ruin the family. I didn't want to tell no one. You know, and I sure as hell didn't want anybody to look down on me and think that I was any less than anyone else. So I used that as power. I held that in. You know, I went out and did all this crazy stuff, man. At 10 years old, I picked up drugs and alcohol. And I ran with it. Because it allowed me, or at least I thought, to be someone who I always wanted to be. I was able to go out and do the wild, crazy stuff. You know, Jackass came out when I was in that age group. So we go out and do all this crazy stuff, jumping all this stuff. Because at that point, man, I didn't know what pain was. I didn't. I loved it. The more and more people beat me up, more and more I beat myself up, the stronger I felt. You know, so I did it for so long. You know, and it messed me up. You know, because I was never willing to tell no one. I was never willing to have my voice told. But what happened was is that I ran with it for a long time. And surely enough, I decided to give up this program for 24 hours at 26 years old. And I went out drinking with some friends. And I woke up in another man's bed with my private region in his hand. And I was fully conscious at that point and allowed it to happen. because A, this guy was like three times my size, and I'm out in the neighborhood, I didn't know where to go. So my idea was just allow it to happen, try to finish as fast as possible so I can get out of there. And I told him, listen, man, you better give me all the money that you have in your pocket. And I took all the drugs that he had in his house because I knew that was, I thought that was the only thing that was going to help me. And I allowed that to continuously take me in and out of this program for another 2.5 years. But thank God that another man, a big, strong, tattooed man, came into the treatment facility that I was in and spoke on this. So finally, I was like, wow, there is guys out there that actually speak about this, that actually had this happen, and they're not ashamed of it. You know, because the way I like to put it, man, is that I'm no longer a victim of this. You know, I'm a survivor. You know, and the only thing that this allows me to do is it allows me to have a message. So I come out and share it with a bunch of you guys. I've never met half of you. You know, but I'm not afraid to share it no more. I share about it publicly in meetings if it goes along with the topic. Because the more and more I talk about it, the less power it has over me. You know, the less and less that baggage on my back I have to carry. Because the more and more I talk about it, the quicker and easier it is to give it away. You know, because I spoke on a panel in Minneapolis, and surely enough, I had a girl come up to me after and was like, I'm struggling with this. And the favorite part of your story that I heard, man, was that you no longer have to carry this baggage no more. If you don't want to deal with this no more, I will carry it for you. Because that's just who I am. I help men and women in this program from all over the United States on the subject. Because I'm fully willing and able to talk about it. I have nothing to hide no more. You know, because the more and more I hide who I was and what had happened to me, the less and less my voice gets heard. And I don't want that no more. I don't have to hide who I am no more. For so long, I beat myself up because I tried to fit that society's mold. I thought I had to be that muscular man. Big old muscles, man. I thought I had to weigh a certain weight for any girls to like me. I thought I had to act a certain way for people to like me. But that's not true today. I no longer suffer from anorexia. I no longer beat my body up. I love the weight I'm at today. I weigh more today than I ever have in my entire life, and I'm so happy about it. I no longer have to change who I am on the outside because I am exactly the way my higher power sees me fit to be. You know, what matters most to me today, man, is who I am on the inside and how I carry myself and how I represent on a daily basis inside and outside of these rooms. Because that's all I got. I can tell you guys a whole bunch of grand stuff out of my mouth. But once you see me walking down the street, man, I'm not doing what I'm saying, man. You're never going to believe me. So I help people that are in this program and not. Because I act the same exact way that you see me right now that I do hanging out with my friends or when I'm at work. Because I never know when there's going to be someone that's struggling with this and needs to talk. Because I'm very vocal, very loud, and I never used to be like that. I was a kid that sat in the back, too afraid to say anything, too afraid to make friends. I was a kid that would walk in the mall and there'd be 1,400 people and still feel alone because I was so broken on the inside, you know? But I no longer live like that no more. You know, I know my triggers today. I know my boundaries that I set with my friends. You know, I still have very bad trust issues when it comes to men. So it took me 5 years of coming in and out of this program to actually get a male sponsor. And I actually go through the steps and I actually be able to speak about this. But once it happened to me again at 26 years old, which was 4 years ago, I finally broke down, cried, and told my mother what had happened. Because I could no longer carry it no more. It was legitimately like, I was a guy that just walked down the street every single day and just stared at the ground because I was too afraid to look anybody in the eyes. I didn't want them to see the pain that was going on inside me. I only wore that smile on the outside so you would stop asking me so many damn questions. I don't no longer do that today. You see a smile on my face, it's on the inside too. Because that's what matters the most to me. That's the friends that I carry in my life today. The people they are on the inside. Do not care what you look on the outside. Do not care if you like me or not. In reality, you can't sit here and judge me for the person I am today, because I am exactly the way that your higher power sees you me fit to be. So how can I sit here and judge you for the way that you are and the way that you present yourself, because you are exactly the way your higher power sees you fit to be? You know, my life is great today, because I no longer base my life on the material things I have. I do not care that I don't have a big ass house or a nice car or the most best paying job no more. I do not care, because that does not define me. The money in my pocket does not define me. Who I am on the inside and how I feel about life today is what defines me. My perspective on this world is what defines me. Because I'm the only one that's ever going to be able to see through my eyes. I'm the only one that's ever going to know what's going on in my head. So on a daily basis, I give my higher power yesterday so that he can allow me, if he sees it fit for me, to wake up in the morning and restart my day, restart my life, and live a new one. Because that's the greatest gift. It's the only thing I'm ever gifted every single morning is the ability to wake up and be able to share this shit with everybody else. Everything outside of my life is a bonus. My friends, my place to live, it's all a bonus. It's all materialistic to me. Because the more and more I take that shit for granted, the faster I'm going to give it away. You know, so like I said, man, I thank you so much for coming to dealing with this panel. And if any of you guys are struggling with it and you heard a little bit of experience, strength, and hope with me and you want to talk, know that I will talk to any of you any time of the night. I don't care where you live. I do not care. My phone is always on. Legitimately, nothing is too big or too small that you have to carry alone. Because guess what? All y'all are helping me carry my baggage right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Please help us welcome Meredith.
Hi, I'm Meredith. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 14th, 2016. I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. I usually speak about this when I tell my story, but I've never been on a panel that focuses on this specifically. So this is new and different, but really awesome for me. I'm really looking forward to talking about this. So let's see. This aspect of my life, I completely mentally repressed until I went to treatment when I was 18 for the first time. And I had no recollection of it until I was working with my counselor in treatment. And I remembered that my older sister, who is 9 years older than I am, molested me from as early as I can remember, age 3, till about age 12. Chronically, frequently, and I had no idea how to deal with it. I probably should have stayed in that treatment center and continued to deal with it, but she brought my sister and my mom in and I confronted them, and I just wasn't ready for it. And I told my mom, if you don't get me out of this treatment center, I'm gonna leave and become a crack whore in Houston. And she was like, okay, I'll take you home. Took me back to Fort Worth. And I became a crack whore in Fort Worth. But it was just, like Dave said, I mean, family. I felt so betrayed by my sister. I didn't know who to trust, what to do with it. I was also raped. My first sexual encounter with a man was rape. And I was 13. I was at a youth group event, and one of the other kids' uncles was driving us all home. And I realized as he was dropping kids off that my house was kind of back there. Like, why didn't I get dropped off in the correct way? And it was because he dropped everybody else off and then took me to a parking lot that's right down the street from my parents' house today and raped me. And everything just changed from that point. I was really involved with church. You know, I was an acolyte in the Episcopal Church, super involved in youth group. And when that happened, I completely turned away from the church. I became atheist, and I no longer went to church, hung out with those people, did any of those things. I found out later that that man's in prison for raping other young girls, about 12 to 14-year-old girls. But I didn't speak up at the time. His nephew knew kind of what happened because I really changed at that point. And he was like, what happened when he took you home? Like, I know something happened and you need to talk about it. You need to speak up because this is not okay. But I just couldn't. I mean, that I apparently am really good at just stuffing things down and not looking at it. And then it all just bottles up and explodes later when I'm 18 in treatment, or I drink and use over it for years and years and years to just stuff it all down. I too was in and out of the program for years, mostly because of my issues with God and the church and all of that. I went to treatment 5 times before I got this deal 3 years ago. But it all just, everything was just too much. I have a lot of other trauma in my life. I became promiscuous, I just didn't have any respect for my body. I just kind of let people do with me as they wanted because I just thought that's what happens. That's what we do. That's what I'm here for, I guess. So I was often that drunk girl at parties that just completely passes out and then wakes up knowing something happened, just not quite sure what. So when I came in and finally started working my steps, writing the fourth step, I had a ton of resentments. And my sponsor then had a different idea on the fourth step that I don't completely agree with today, but she didn't have me do fears and sex. She just had me do a resentment list. And because she said, if you're not resentful at every person you've had sex with, you're either not having sex or not making resentments right. And I was like, then I'm not doing either of those things because I'm not resentful at every person I've had sex with. I don't remember half of those people. So I didn't do a sex inventory until this year with my new sponsor a few months ago. And it was very transformative for me to really look at the way my sex behaviors developed as a result of this thing. Because in my mind, rape, molestation is not sex, but my sex behaviors completely changed because of the trauma that I went through. I still have issues during consensual sex with certain things based off things that happened with my sister when I was young. I can't do certain things. I don't want to be touched in a certain way. And I'm still really doing a lot of work around that. I don't have the ability financially to do therapy, which I highly recommend. I've done it in treatment before, can't currently do it. But the sponsor that I have now, the last time we met, he said, you know, because he's having me stay on step 6 to really look at my character defects and be ready for that. And one of the things we were talking about was deep resentment. And he said, who do you have deep resentment against? My sister and myself. And he was like, if you're gonna work with me, we're gonna deal with this with your sister. And I was just like, oh, but I need to, like, I need to deal with that. All of my other resentments, even the rape that I went through, I've really dealt with. It's just that sister that stays with me. We don't have a relationship today. She lives in Colorado, I live in Texas, and we just don't talk at all. When I confronted her about it in treatment, she was like, I don't remember that, but if it happened, I'm sorry. And then she sent me a big long text message a few years later, apologizing for it. But I was like, a text message? Really? And I was using. So it was just a big mess. So I kind of have a different take on my part in these situations with resentment. I don't believe that I had a part in my rape. at all. But I did have a part with my sister because I used that to manipulate my family. I emotionally booby-trapped them. I did that with men that I was in relationships with. I used that part of my life to get power in the relationship, to manipulate, to make people feel sorry for me, to get what I wanted, all kinds of things. So I did have a part with my sister. And so I looked at that, acknowledged that, and I can continue to still have a part in that if I continue to do those things. So that's something that I work on. But I don't believe that I had a part in the rape, which I know people have very varying opinions on that, but that's just the way I feel about that circumstance. So a big part with me that I'm working on now is trying to separate the behavior from the person, trying to understand that we're all sick. The sick man's prayer is huge for me, and I add curse words to it and scream it sometimes, and it works for me. You know, this is a sick person, and it helps. But separating the behavior, separating what my sister did from my sister. She's still my sister. She's still my family. And then trying to just keep those things and just look at her for who she is. She's clearly sick from what happened. And then I also just try to meditate on detaching myself from the anger and from the negativity, because if I'm carrying that around, it's only affecting me. It's only hurting me. It's not hurting anybody else. It's like, you know, drinking at people, which I used to do, which only harms me. But if I keep that anger and stay in it, then I feel like I'm still a part of that negativity, if that makes sense. So I just try to not carry that stuff around. It's a daily thing for me, for sure. Anytime I hear her name or my parents talk about her, I cringe. But it's huge progress from where I was, because we've been in the same, you know, room together holidays, and it's not a horrible thing every time, which is huge progress. So I did just want to read from the big book on page 69 about the sane and sound. I didn't know what a sane and sound sex ideal was until like a year ago, and I have 3 years sober. But it says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. So that's what I try to live up to today. And for me to get into a sexual relationship, in my idea, I need to be what I've put down on paper as my sane and sound. And currently, I'm not there. So I'm not in a sexual relationship right now. I'm doing a lot of work around that. And it's really changed everything to finally have ownership and understand why I was doing all of those things for so long, why I had those behaviors, and just really analyzing what happened. And then I can know from today forward not to do those things. And if I do, why? Look at it, get it on paper, write it down, talk to my sponsor. So this has been really big. It's definitely still a work in progress, but it's a big part of my program today, working on this stuff and talking to other women about this stuff. So I too, if you need my phone number, I'm willing to give it to anybody. I'm really glad to be here. I'm really glad that we're talking about this. So yeah, I think that's all I have, but thank you.
Thank you, Meredith. Please help me welcome Rebecca.
Hi guys, I'm Rebecca, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Rebecca.
I set a timer as well. All right. My sobriety date is 4/20/17. I have a sponsor and I'm from Gainesville, Florida. My home group is By the Book. It meets Monday nights at 8 p.m. So if you're ever in Gainesville, Florida, come by and see us. We'd love to see you. All right. Well, I really relate a lot to what has been shared before me. Boston Dave and I spoke on the panel in Minnesota together, and sorry, I'm a wee bit sick. That was the first time that I had ever spoken publicly about my sexual assault, so this is only number two for me. But I know that it's beneficial, because I know how it felt after I spoke about it the first time. I can relate a lot to their stories. I grew up in a very sick household. My father abused my mother for 27 years in every way a person can be abused. And I was adopted. My mom couldn't have children. She had had several miscarriages and she thought by adopting me, it would stop the abuse on her because then there would be a child in the home. And unfortunately what happened was it just gave him another outlet to abuse. So my mom was really broken. And my father was really, really controlling. And growing up for the first 9 years of my life before he went to prison, it was just hell. A lot of, you know, who I am now and the way I behave now or I have behaved in the past, I relate a lot of that to what happened to me as a child. Because I didn't have the choice of when I was going to lose my virginity. I didn't get to grow up. I didn't get to, you know, go through puberty and experience all of those changes without having had this experience first. So I was really resentful at my father for taking that away from me because it changed me as a person and it set this timeline of events that happened after it. You know, when my father went to prison, I was 9 years old. I am pleased to say he got life in prison with no possible chance of parole, so he will never get out. My mom broke. She didn't know how to live life because she had been controlled for so long. So I became the main supporter of the household. I picked up drugs around 12 years old, alcohol, around 12 years old, and I used that to escape. Because I, like everyone else that has spoken before me, and probably everyone in this room, had pushed everything down. I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to feel, because if I felt, I didn't know what was going to happen. I had no control over that. So I just pushed it down. And I used those drugs and alcohol, those substances, to escape. And when I was 15 years old, I took in my little cousin Tyler. His mom was in and out, drugs and alcohol, and just participating in some very unhealthy behaviors, and he had nowhere else to go. And as a family, we don't like people to know that we're struggling. We put that face on, that everything's okay. So I, as a 15-year-old, in the middle of my addiction, took in a 5-year-old who was entirely dependent on me. And at that point in time, my mother, I was still supporting her, so now that's two people that I'm trying to support, and I was raped. And I was at a party, and I decided to go to this party so that I could get some release because I was tired of a 5-year-old following me around asking me questions, and I was tired of my mother, who was just not feeding herself properly, and I went to a party, and I was sexually assaulted, and 2 months later, I found out that I was pregnant. And this was the worst time of my life because I did not know how to deal with this. everything was falling apart. And, you know, I couldn't take care of myself because I'm in the middle of my addiction, but yet I'm taking care of myself. I'm taking care of a 5-year-old. I'm taking care of my mother, and now I'm pregnant, and I didn't know how to deal with it. So I kept using and using and using because I didn't want to deal with these things. And I used until I miscarried. And that broke me. I went into a downward spiral and I attempted suicide. I no longer cared if, you know, this 5-year-old is dependent on me or my mom. I didn't want to deal with the things. Thankfully, you know, I was saved by an ambulance and I was brought back. And from there, I went to treatment. And when I was in treatment, I didn't particularly take it seriously just because, you know, I was so numb to everything. And I had used all of these substances for so many years to just like not feel, that I didn't want to look at the things that would make me feel. But it planted the seed. And then, you know, I started trying to work this program and everything. And I've found as the years went on, and the work that I've done with my current sponsor and my sponsors before, every time I go through the steps, I get a little deeper. You know, I was so afraid in the beginning to even talk about this stuff, just to one person, which was my sponsor, you know, in a private setting, with no one else around. I was terrified, but I did it. And from there, I was okay to talk to a small group of women who were struggling with it. And from there, maybe I'll talk about it a little bit in a meeting. And from there, you know, maybe I'll share about it more openly in a bigger meeting. And, you know, then I went to Minipaw and I spoke about it on a panel at Minipaw. And now I'm here. And I'm just going to say, I drove across the country for this. Not halfway. I drove 36 hours with two crazy people over there from Florida to be here because of how much it means to me and how much I know I've grown since I've started talking about this. You know, not everything is peaches and rainbows just because I started working a program. It doesn't mean that, you know, I changed overnight and automatically the sexual assault that I've been through doesn't matter anymore, doesn't affect me, because it sure does, you know? I realized along the way that I started behaving in a manner that wasn't acceptable to myself because I didn't know how to have interactions with someone that I was sexually attracted to. I too became promiscuous because I didn't respect my body. Because one thing that has always stood out to me is we accept the love we think we deserve. So my father told me that I'm a piece of shit, that I'm never gonna amount to anything. Don't cry, don't show emotion. You're not worth anything. You know, I was never coddled or loved by my mother. And then through the sexual assault and the string of boyfriends and girlfriends of years past, you know, just built me into this person where I didn't know what respect was. And I've done a lot of work on it, and I'm not cured, you know? I don't wake up every day today and I'm like, I love myself unconditionally, because guess what? There are days when I feel like shit, you know? And there are times and moments in my life where I just want a Band-Aid, you know? My boyfriend broke up with me, so therefore I need a Band-Aid. My girlfriend cheated on me, therefore I need a Band-Aid. Because there are still times when I don't want to feel those feelings. It's less frequent nowadays, but it doesn't mean that it's not a thing. And I'm a very blunt, open, honest person. And I feel like if every person got to, you know, stand up at a podium or stage or something and say that everything was just butterflies and rainbows, you know, that how would you relate to that? You know, I am still broken. I am still mending. But my process is beautiful and it's my own. So I am exactly where I need to be in my process. I don't try and be anywhere else. I try and be mindful of my own actions and the way that I present myself and the way that I handle certain situations and what is detrimental to me versus what is good for me. But, you know, some days are better than others. And it's just like that with sobriety. So I'm exactly where I need to be. I am super grateful that I was asked to speak on this topic. It is very important to me. I feel like it definitely should be talked about more. And so thank you to anyone who's on host who had anything to do with this. I am always here if you're struggling with this, just like everybody else has said. I'm on Facebook. I'm very active on the interwebs. I will also give out my phone number to anyone, anytime. You're not alone. So if you're really struggling with this, like, I guarantee you, I've been where you've been. Whatever thought process, you know, the situation may not be the same, the actions, the people, the places may not be the same, but the feelings are. That common bond that bonds us with alcoholism in this program bonds us with this subject. So I am here for you, and all you need to do is reach out. Thank you, Rebecca. Next, please help me welcome Tommy.
My name is Tommy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you three for the honesty you've shared with us today. It never stops being amazing and inspiring seeing a woman who's gone through this and willing and open, brave enough to share it. And then for me, seeing other men talk about it, it continues to remind me, one, why I was so hesitant to share about what happened to me in the first place, and two, reminds me that, you know, at the end of the day, we're all survivors of this. And it's our job, just like in AA, our job to reach out and be there for the sick and suffering alcoholic. I take that to a next level in life today for anyone who's ever been a victim of sexual assault. So when I was 8 years old, my parents were going through their divorce, and my mother continued a relationship with a man that she was cheating on my father with. My mother is very, very codependent, probably where I got it from. She's shown based on her actions that she's incapable of not having someone to lean on, and she's still like that today. And my mother was very, very dependent on this man for many different things. She got a job working overnight, so she immediately trusted him to watch me, my brother, and my sisters while we slept. So very shortly after that, one night I wake up with him sitting on my bed, and he severely sexually and physically assaulted me. And that went on for a little over 3 months straight, almost every single night. Building a relationship with God has been huge for me as I've dealt with this, because I was very, very angry with God. My family growing up, I wouldn't say we were religious necessarily, but we went to church, and my parents were very, very vocal in getting me to believe in a God of their understanding. Never did they encourage me to develop a relationship with a God of my understanding. So the God of their understanding was a loving and caring God that punished those who did wrong. So at 8 years old, going to bed every single night on my knees, praying to God, please don't let it happen tonight. Please do not let him come in here tonight. And it happened anyways. That was very, very, I didn't understand what I did at 8 years old. I played Little League baseball at this time, and my mom asked him to drive me to baseball practice, and I was very, very scared being alone with him. And I went to my mom, unable to speak, just shaking, and she looks at me and asks me, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Please, can you take me?" And she gave me a hug, and she told me everything was going to be okay. She'd see me after work. So I knew we weren't going to baseball practice very soon after I got in his truck. He took me to this house, told me to get out of the truck, And at 8 years old, I was severely sexually and physically assaulted by him and five other men. And he took me to the hospital right afterwards because I was in really rough shape. And his face went from calm to frantic in an instant, screaming for them. He went to pick me up from baseball practice and he found me laying in the grass like this. And they believe him. And I'm so scared that they're trying to get me to talk to doctors, nurses, psychiatrists, police, CPS, you name it. And all I kept saying was, I want to see my mom. I want to see my mom. Finally, 3 days later, they let me see my mom. And I remember this like yesterday. My mom walks in my hospital room and starts bawling her eyes out, sits on my bed, holds my hand, and she asks, what happened? So I say, Mom, I have to tell you something. So I proceed to tell her what happened. My mom stopped crying, wiped her face, got up and looked at me and said, you need to start telling me the truth, and walked out. I never wanted to feel that way ever again in my life. I was so embarrassed and wondering what I did for my mom not to believe me. And if my mom's not gonna believe me, who is? I'm just a kid, no one is gonna believe me. I convinced myself I couldn't tell my father because growing up, my dad's what I guess is called, you know, a man's man. Very, very tough man, very, very into manly things. And growing up, I always heard him say, you know, toughen up, it's gonna be okay. All those things. If I tell my father what happened to me, he's gonna think less of me. My dad's not gonna love me anymore. I'm not gonna be the son that he's trying to raise me to be. So I promised myself I was never gonna talk about what happened ever again. Fortunately, I never saw that man again. My mom broke things off with him. To this day, I don't know what happened to him. But the effect was there. It affected growing up. It affected my relationships that I was able to make with other people. I never was able to develop strong relationships with people that I was sexually attracted to, because I always felt that the feeling wasn't mutual. I always felt like I was an unattractive kid, that I was something was wrong with me, because in my mind, you know, that maybe it's because only men find me attractive or something like that, because I was so I was very confused and very depressing. And throughout my using, I carried this with me always, and but I never talked about it. Through my first two stints in treatment, I never was open and honest with anyone. And then my third time, when sobriety finally stuck with me, September 20th, 2013 is my sobriety date. I was in a treatment center and I had the best possible counselor I could have had. She was not an alcoholic or an addict, but she was connected very, very spiritually. And she could just read me like no one's ever been able to before. So I go into her, this is our second time meeting, and she asked me how I'm doing today, and it's a reflex, I'm fine. And she looks at me, she says, no, you're not. How are you doing? And I kept pushing it off. That woman would not leave me alone. She was driving me nuts. And I get up to leave, and she gets up and she puts her hand on the door. She's like, you need to tell me. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's illegal for you to hold me in here. She's like, no, like I'm not taking this. What? And she screamed, what's wrong? And I just started bawling my eyes out, crying. I keep thinking about this. This is what happened to me when I was a kid. This is this. I can't hold this anymore. I'm 21 years old. This happened 13 years ago. I don't know what to do. My dad's gonna think less of me. This, and I look at the clock. I've been crying for an hour, and that woman, I probably ruined her blouse because of all the snot coming out of my nose. But she gave me a hug that I've never felt that kind of love and comfort before in my life. And she told me she loved me and that everything was gonna be okay, that it would never had to happen again, and that I can make changes. And that was the first time I felt love. My family was very loving to me, but I never was receptive towards that love. But that was the first time since I was a child that I was actually willing to receive love from another human being. And it was the most amazing thing in my life. And that woman had me do some very uncomfortable things. She had me write a letter to my 8-year-old self. And it was a group of about 30 people in her. She sat me in the center of the room and she put an empty chair in front of me. She said, I want you to pretend that this is the 8-year-old you're talking to. And I want you to tell him what you wanted to hear. And I told my 8-year-old self, you know, I want you to know this doesn't define you. Don't stop trusting people, you know, that you are a survivor that's going to help people. And I wanted to do that, but I realized that, and she showed me the part in the AA big book that says sometimes we do need to seek outside help for things because the steps only do so much for us. So I've been very fortunate over the past almost 5 years. I'm still in therapy. I've been very, very active and very fortunate that I've been able to have the means to do so. And it's very, very beneficial. I still struggle with it, you know, like my relationships with others have greatly improved. I have some of the best friends that I've ever had in my life today. They're some of the most solid men and women that I've ever known in my life. And, you know, I still struggle when it comes to relationships with women on another level. That's something that has improved over the past several years. I'm willing to be open and vulnerable today. And the best things that have happened in my sobriety have to do with helping others that struggle with this, because at the end of the day, that this happened to me, but it's not for me. This is not my circumstance and situation to hold on to. It's my job to share it with other people, because if hearing my struggle and how I've overcome it can be the only thing to help someone else do the same thing, then I can't just sit around and wait. Like I need to get my story out there, because my goal, no child should ever have to feel what I went through as a child, ever. And you know, I set the bar high. I don't want any child to ever have to go through that, and I want to prevent it. Is that a very realistic goal alone? Absolutely not. So I have to be brave, and I have to speak up so that others will do the same. Because 2 is better than 1, 4 is better than 2, 8's better, you know, just keep multiplying that. Like I heard early on when I got to the rooms, what I can't do alone, we can do together. And I've always fought this particular issue with that in my mind, that I need others to help me if at the end of the day we're gonna accomplish what we want to accomplish, you know. So I want to thank you all for hearing me. And you know, like these three said, if anyone ever needs to talk about this, even if it's not this, just talk in general, or know someone that is struggling with this, call me, give them my number, have them call me. I will always, especially for this, drop what I'm doing and come, because at the end of the day, the stuff I do in life today, I get to do because I've worked this program to the best of my ability every single day. Some days it's not as good as the day before, but that's, trust me when I say that's, it's those bad days I'm doing the best I can, because I could be doing a lot worse. So again, thank you. And that pass.
Thank you, Tommy.